Today on Criminal Minds, we get into the minds of the criminals. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yes.
I thought that was good.
Thank you.
Criminals committing crime.
Oh, bad voice.
So hard.
You need that Nightline voice.
No, you did it great. I was just punctuating.
That was hard.
That was fantastic.
Welcome back, everybody. Back to AfterBuzz TV. We are here doing Criminal Minds After Show. We're back. We took a month off, but we're back. Don't worry. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Joining me, as always...
I'm Michelle Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Cullen.
Yes. And I'm Chris Howard. After taking those months off, our minds are all more criminally oriented. I'm Chris Howard. Reach out to me at Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. We are coming to episode 9, Profiling 202.
I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is my favorite episode so far.
Really? Why was it your favorite? What made it your favorite?
Because I actually wish that every... And this is the episode she worked on, too. She told me beforehand.
I did.
But apparently she has to kill you if she tells you what happened behind the scenes.
NDAs.
They're for making you a criminal, so you should be on the show.
That's right.
There we go.
Then we'd have to profile you. It was my favorite because they showed behind the scenes, and they really got into the psychology and all that. And like, I wish every episode was like this. I love it. I could watch that all day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michelle, your thoughts?
I loved it. When this character, Tommy Yates, was first introduced back in season 7, that was really the first time that they did this style of intense profiling and education. Mm-hmm. And it was just so great. And to continue on that storyline, and Virgil Williams wrote that episode and this episode, was a very cohesive storyline within Rossi's life in particular, but all of theirs. So I thought it was really well done and really enjoyable, and it felt very natural.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I really liked it because, you know, this show has been around for... you know, seasons now, and I liked how every episode so far this season felt like a brand new episode, like breaking away from their stereotypical formulaic way that they have every episode, and the way that they say quotes now at the end, or wasn't
that's interesting,
a voiceover of a quote, it was actually one of them saying a quote, you know, like there are different ways of shaking things up, but it's still true and it still rings every beat of what the show is. Mm. And there are different angles of approaching the same thing. I really enjoyed it. I think this was a great episode. Definitely a good episode to return back after the hiatus. And this episode dealt with all Rossi, which is great because I feel like every time we get a Rossi storyline, it's always very tragic and very sad.
That's true. And I think they did this very well because it's really just picking back up where we left off in a really, really sad narrative. Mm-hmm. And seeing how it's affected him over the past, 4 or 5 years, let's say, mm-hmm. since that tradition of Tommy Yates giving him a name on his birthday started. Just kind of the weight that that's had on him and knowing that Tommy Yates is one of the people that escaped in the mass breakout.
Yeah.
There's depth to it. There's good, rich character development for Rossi, showing behind the scenes, even when he talks about smoking a cigar and the things, how he likes to cook. I like to see those elements of his personality so that it brought a vulnerability to the character that was that I really appreciated. So.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this episode, again, breaking away from their formula, but I can't really recall them once saying the word unsub, because we already knew who the serial killer was, but the victims was that their slow reveal of each victim, which I kind of sounds terrible, but enjoyed the way that they slowly revealed. I am. I have a dark side. But they were like characters that were going to be killed already, so like it just built this tension, apprehension, and anxiety. Knowing that they're going to be dead, even though they preface the whole episode that he always tells us someone who's already died years ago, and then we find them. But just knowing it's going to happen hasn't happened yet. scary.
Yeah, yes. Put a little pressure on the episode. Are they gonna reach him before he kills the victim or not?
Yep.
Yeah.
And they didn't really until the last one, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it said a lot about Rossi and how he dealt with it. And I liked how going away from their conventions of bringing more people into this particular storyline, because I feel like Rossi is an individual sufferer. He likes to isolate himself, and he's the only one dealing with the issue. He doesn't like bringing other people into his problem. But the fact that he had the whole team, based on the seminars that they're giving, he had them help. What were your thoughts of the seminars and what we got out of them?
I thought it was good. When we were first introduced to Tommy Yates, it was an undergraduate criminology class, so there was a different caliber of learning and a different level of knowledge presented to the team. Mm-hmm. It was definitely more education-based. This became an active case very quickly, or it was always an active case. We just, as the audience, didn't really know it yet because we weren't really aware that Tommy Yates...
How they presented it, how the episode unfolded.
Yeah, how it unfolded. But having it be a seminar where they're on the clock, on the job training to learn about profiling, why wouldn't you utilize them in that moment? Because everything...
It's a lot of brains.
Everything has changed about this killer.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to figure out why, yeah. Yeah, can't go off the old profile.
Yeah, no, I think it's super intelligent because then you get all those minds there mindstorming to come up with answers, and they're absolutely likely to throw out some ideas that wouldn't pop to the surface of your consciousness if you were, you know, just the four or five people on the case. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really cool, and it was interesting to see just the way that they do the profiling. That's, I think, what really was the coolest part of the episode for me, was to see, you know, to see that there was an edge of reality to it. And I don't know how real it actually is. You know, does it really correlate to what would happen in real life? But I thought it probably got a little bit closer than what we've seen in other episodes. So that's what I really appreciate. I like this writer. What was his name? Virgil Williams.
Yep.
Virgil Williams?
Yeah.
Has he done a lot of other episodes as well?
Yes.
He's one of the co-executive producers of the show.
Okay.
He's written a few, directed a few.
Yeah, he's written many episodes.
Yeah.
Back in season 7 was actually airing, Criminal Minds used to do a live chat. I don't think they do it anymore. They used to do a live chat with either a director, a writer, or one of the main stars of the episode.
Did they ever do it just with criminals?
Oh, yeah.
No.
We're going to do a live chat with criminals this minute.
I wouldn't want to get into the minds.
Yeah.
Unless it's on the show.
Yeah.
But they would do live chats with, you know, general audience member such as myself. And Virgil Williams was actually one of them, and I actually asked him a question.
Did you get it answered?
He answered, yeah.
Do you remember what it was?
It was the episode where, in season 7, where the little kids were abducted. And I asked, I was like, how difficult is it to write a story, such a dark story, having kids in it? You know, does that change anything? He's like, you have to realize that kids are on the show. They know what, you know, they know
it's
fake. They know they're actors. And it's a different mentality that they have when you film the show compared to what we see afterwards.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, and that doesn't really go into the writing, but knowing that the actors know it's all fake at the end of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't damage their young psyches.
Yeah. But he has written a lot of episodes for the show. Let's get into it. So it's Rossi's birthday. Apparently he has the every year birthday anniversary of getting the phone call from Yates. But we get into the victims. Jody Wilson, who was late 40s, early 50s. And it was just terrible knowing how all these victims were killed.
Yeah, that
back
was
in
pretty
those days.
Sick and twisted, huh?
Taking out the reproductive organs and vocal cords were ripped out.
Right.
And that was his MO. Like,
because
women
he
in their 40s
the
and 50s.
Fact that he had been ever born.
Yep. He starved them for a few days and then he would brutally mutilate.
Mm-hmm. Mutilate the reproductive organs because when he was younger, he hated the fact that he was ever born.
Yeah.
And that's dark, twisted.
His entire journey was dark and twisted.
But that's the great thing about very true. But that's the great thing about the show. You know, we understand why he is the way he is as an adult because his childhood was messed up.
Yep.
Also for the, but the second victim, Regina Franklin, changes the MO. This is where it all changes. It was actually a 26-year-old, so someone younger, and 37 stab wounds to the genitalia and lower abdomen, 10 to the throat. Yeah. And this is where, you know, he goes off book, and they really have to question him. Like, why is he changing?
Yeah, 37 stab wounds. Like, that was the first time that I remember hearing. Did any of the other victims have that many stab wounds that we heard about? Because it's like, we know that
it's
he
like
was...
overkill.
Yeah, it's overkill. Yeah, because we know that he was frail, because then we, you know, we're going to find out why. But the overkill, I could see somebody, in his case, I think it's because of the lack of feeling of power that he wanted, mm-hmm. and control. So going a little overkill would give him that feeling of power, I suppose.
I agree with that. I also think it's expediting the process.
So
he doesn't know how to process the fact that he's dying and he's still dealing with all of those feelings of wishing he was never born, and he still has the urge to kill, but he wants to kill as many people as possible. So stabbing makes it go a lot quicker.
Yeah. What were your thoughts of when they were building the profile for Yates, that they kind of realized he might have tried to live out a normal life?
Yeah, because he had with Jody, because he had been with her for a little while and mm-hmm. apparently had become her boyfriend. So that was quite revealing. And you'd have to ask yourself the questions that they asked. That's why I liked it. You know, it's like, okay, what's this shift? He's not done this before. What's happening in his life?
I thought that was fascinating. I still don't fully get it. I've watched the episode twice now, and I just, like, mm-hmm. I still personally don't fully understand why he would try to have a normal life after breaking out of prison.
Yeah.
Like, maybe something happened in prison that we're just not aware of.
Remember, what happened was he was diagnosed with cancer.
That's
so
true.
Now he's
got...
Yeah,
that's...
Yeah.
Cancer. What's he going to do? You know, possibly seek out something different, see if there's something else to be had in that type of a life, I guess.
Right. And that's, I was just trying to think. I was like, he's killed... They said at the beginning that he has... They covered... Sorry, I'm reading my notes. The escaped convicts... Goodness. Numbers. I can't do numbers, you guys. Escaped convicts. There was 47 victims recovered, but they claimed over 100
101, I think he said, that he had killed. Yeah.
Over 100 victims just in total. So a guy who has actively killed over 100 people, how does that kind of person... try to resume a normal life or try to live out an idealized version of a normal life?
Well, I mean, you got to think, too. If his days are numbered and he's coming out, he's like, I've only got so many days. What am I going to do with them? That's the question he's asking. You know, it's like, I'm going to die. What is my life all about? Just like anybody would, I guess. You know, let's say you were an AfterBuzz host up until the time, and then you found out you had cancer, you're going to die. It's like, okay, shit, do I stay, keep hosting? Do I go do something else? Do I visit my family? Do I have a girlfriend? Do I kill some more people?
What
do I
do?
Yeah. I don't know.
But I get it. I do get that analogy. Did you ever feel bad for Yates in this episode? Now knowing that he has cancer and he's going about these women in a different way. Like, did you feel bad for him knowing that he has limited time?
No.
I
thought he would get shot in the face instead of the stomach.
Really?
Yeah. And I would have been okay with that.
I didn't feel bad for him, but I appreciated his human moment. That really speaks to our prison system, where he was just like, I will not go back to prison. I will not die in there. I can't do it. You're either going to have to kill me or let me kill her and run away. Like, I'm not going to go.
So he'd rather die than be in prison? But I mean, I don't know if that's so bad.
Well, he's going to die anyway. Yeah. We're all going to die anyway. He just didn't want to die in prison from cancer.
Yeah, and well, we also knew that, like, he had no chance of parole. He's there for, like, three lifetime sentences. So,
which
like,
is interesting, because at first he said...
was the only thing he had to go for.
Yeah, his first negotiation was to get life in prison rather than death, and now he's saying, I'd rather have be dead than go back.
Understandable. Understandable. I do admit there were some moments I'm like, oh man, like he is human, like you said, and he had his humanistic moments. But I did feel bad for him. But that again, that doesn't justify him just because his time is running out. He has to go out
and pull some more
and
wounds
kills out. Someone. You know.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point that they were trying to get across in the episode, because there's even one instance where one of the coordinators says, "Why would you try to empathize with this monster?" or something like that. And he's like, "They're not monsters, they're just people."
That actually, that was an interesting aspect of the episode that I really got into as well. With how, you know, to imagine sitting down with the unsub at dinner and talking to him, and having a conversation, having a normal conversation. And there was a point where Rossi said, "I even think he likes me." Well, then you have to wonder, with the way that Rossi's laying things out, does he actually even kind of like the unsub? Because he was like, you got to have the rapport, you've got to have the connection, you've got to have this, we've got to look at them as people, we have to, you know. And he's like, and I think he even likes me, and I have respect for them, he said at one point. You have to respect them like respecting your opponent. Is there some aspect, some shadow aspect of him that even likes the unsub? I'd probably say no, but it was there.
Yeah, it was a really interesting connection that those two had, and like how they wrote, really tie those two together. Because I kind of asked the same question. I was like, why does Yates have such a fascination with Rossi? Why him out of all the other profilers that are there on the team?
Well, he put him away. He's the guy who put him away.
Yeah. But, you know, like, but keep going back to him when he knows that there are other profilers around. Like, why keep that connection, and why is it so strong?
Well, then you look, Rossi had the fascination with him. So it's like, he was the one that was talking to all the victims. He was the one that, you know, so does...
It was mutual respect,
right?
I think. Yep. But even that little amount of respect that Rossi gave to him kept Yates connected. Going. And why he keeps doing this. He's living out his legend, really.
Yeah.
His story.
Yeah. He wants to be forgotten.
Yeah. And he'll live through Rossi. So I was like, that's a very twisted way to keep Rossi in your circle.
Yeah.
Just so, I think that shows his narcissism, just so his story is known.
Right. Well, we did hear the narcissist. Now, did the question come up if he was a narcissist? Because they did say he was narcissistic up front, right?
He was an introvert with limited social skills.
With limited social skills, but okay. But they did say narcissistic at some point. Yeah?
Narcissistic. It during the simulation. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I loved, you know, maybe a side tangent, but the simulation.
You're right, yeah.
I loved how they showed the different perspectives, because every time we're watching an episode and we're watching a takedown scene, it just happens and we kind of accept it. But like, we don't really question like all the questions that they're thinking of right on the spot.
Right.
And I loved how they showed us like the three different alternate outcomes,
right.
Which is like what we've never seen.
It was like choose your own ending.
Yeah,
simulation.
Yeah, exactly. And it really does stand to reason. I've been in situations where. Professionally, where it became really clear that the person, if you switched the type of conversation you were having with them and say, only you know how to do this, you're the only one who's got the power to overcome that, then the person goes, okay, and they'll be more compliant because you tap into that narcissistic aspect of them. So I totally get that. I thought that was cool.
Right. And I love the moment where, like, if you ask one question, it could ultimately end up in a death. Or if you ask this one, it can end up in two deaths.
What if it was like that here? Why?
Wow. What?
I said, what if that was like that here on the panel?
I don't know that I would hope.
God, I hope not.
Don't ask the wrong question.
But, you know, I did enjoy that. That was a different way of showing us what really goes on during a takedown. Because it happens so fast, you do have to think clearly with all these questions floating around. I thought it was a really good, different way of how they show us.
And it was interesting how they, when they took the shot, and they said take the shot, which was the first one, that they did. It wasn't a clean shot. So it wasn't a shot to the head, or it wasn't a shot that would stop somebody.
Yeah, and that ultimately came back at the end with Rossi when he finds out actually where Yates was. I mean, before we get there. I'm jumping a little bit. But before we get there, the whole imaginary dinner, like what each, you know, agent does to get back into, you know, calm themselves down, try to think straight and clearly.
Some would box, some would do yoga.
Some would go to the shooting range, and like what you do to like get into that mode of where you can think straight. And I really like Rossi's storyline. He cooks. He cooks and actually has like a mental conversation with the unsub. What did you think of this?
I think I was hungry when I was watching this because I was just like, you just made two plates and you're alone. Are you going to eat the other one or does it have a bad connotation now? Like, I get way too about the food. And it was like, that wouldn't be a good system.
So all you could think of was eating.
I was just like, that spaghetti looks delicious.
Yeah, I did a pretty good job on the spaghetti. I think it was actually
pancetta.
I wondered if the second plate was just metaphorical, or, you know, because I couldn't imagine him really setting that second plate
up.
Yeah. I think it was just metaphorical, I hope. Yeah. I hope, for the sake of the episode.
Yeah, I hope so, too. But it got the message across that he has mental conversations with every one of his unsubs.
Right.
More so, try to get into their heads.
Right.
Which I really like.
You know, if you think of a process from a process perspective that could be followed, I get that.
Yeah.
Where would you put the, you know, mm-hmm. actually going through that questioning flow could drive some answers. You know?
Yeah, he got into his head, which, you know, probably one of the best quotes of him this episode. It's like, if you can't get into your own head, you'll never get into someone else's.
Yes.
And this whole mental conversation was him getting into his own head so he can get into Yates's head.
Yep.
So what would Yates do, really?
Yeah.
Taunting him in his own backyard. Did you see this coming?
I did. I thought it might be too obvious to do it that way. But I thought that was kind of where it was going to go. But did you?
I didn't necessarily think it was his backyard at first, but I figured it was a detail that he shared.
Part of his life, right?
Because Yates was staying in the area. He was staying close to Rossi. Mm-hmm. And it was about Rossi. And so it was something that he shared that was a truth that was going to come back and tie it all together.
I would not have shared personal information about where I live.
Yeah, that's very Silence of the Lambs. It's
not to someone who has claimed to kill 101 people.
Yeah, I mean, we know he told truths and some lies, but it was just... I was just amazed that Yates actually knew where Rossi lived. And he's escaped out of prison. He's been out of prison for how long now? And he hasn't gone after Rossi if he knew his address.
Some of those little details, I'm sure in real life that some of those little details just get left out and people don't really think about it. You know, it's like, oh, should I not have my number listed or not have my address in the white pages if I'm chasing criminals, you know?
It was just a scary notion because, I mean, I can believe it was his backyard, like, literally under his own nose. But I would have believed it more if Yates would have buried the bodies, like, right next to the Quantico office or something. Like, right in the heart of where agents are. So, like, in a way, that would be taunting.
Right.
Just the bureau system. But for now, it just added that creepiness factor and that they're really personally connected because they know each other that well.
Yeah. Well, and you think about it, like, Yates has been part of Rossi's life for the last 25 years, and Rossi has been part of Yates' life for at least the last decade. I don't remember exactly when he got caught.
Yeah.
Finally, it's like being best friends.
Since seven or eight years.
He's been tracking him since 92. So...
You are so organized, by the way. You have this written type page note. This is beautiful. Yeah. Yes.
I try. I can't do numbers, but I try. But since 92, so for like a good quarter century, tracking him and just all these victims, just once a year. And then now we got three within a few days. And I'm glad the last victim was alive.
Yeah.
Like, she lit Brandy.
I was surprised by that because I was wondering, does he kill them beforehand and then take them to where he's going to dump them? But apparently he takes them right there and then does the dirty work just before he puts them in the grave, it looked like.
Those were the exceptions.
Were they?
Because his MO was typically to starve them for several days until they were too weak to resist in any capacity, and then they were alive to feel it.
So he had them. So he'd do that and then transport them? Or did he? Okay. Yeah, because here he was doing it right where he was burying her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Rossi took the shot.
He did.
He took several shots.
Did he?
Yeah.
There were like three.
Yeah, there's three different shots. All hit, which was great. I was like, all right, he can shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Rossi. wouldn't want to mess with him. I mean, it just kind of reminded me of moments when Hotch would take the shot. Like, yeah. With the victim.
Yep.
He did that in a lot in season 7.
Oh, did he?
He did. Yeah.
What was interesting, though, like, I don't know if this, maybe I just saw it this way. It almost looked like Yates kind of threw her away from where he was getting shot, because he had the knife at her throat. Mm-hmm. And then there was like a movement this way. It could have been just the body lurching or just the way they shot it, or it could have been him letting go of her because he didn't really want to kill her anyway. He didn't care about that. He was going out. He was hoping that he'd run into Ross. And he said, I was hoping I'd see you.
Yeah.
Because I saw it looked like he was kind of throwing her and
death
stepping into
cop.
Yeah, exactly.
Death
now,
by cop.
Death yeah. by the cop. Yeah.
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 Death by cop. Yeah. Interesting. Really interesting. I did love how, yes, this affected Rossi, but how this also affected the BAU team, because they are a family, really. Mm-hmm. Like, they do all work together, but they've been together long enough to actually truly genuinely care for each other. And
it's
I
like
love
us.
How. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how Prentice was, you know, really compassionate with Rossi. And, like, understood if he needed someone to talk to. And she was encouraging him, like, go home, go sleep, sleep it off, yep. recollect yourself, you know. And a good leader, what a good leader should, of the unit. And then, you know, we also had JJ. JJ showing concern. And even Stephen Walker showing concern.
Yep.
You know, where he actually revealed more about his past with... basically the audience. His first case was based on Rossi.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they lost three, didn't they?
They lost yep. three agents. Yeah. The profile was off. But it just shows, like, how much Rossi has influenced the BAU team. Even Stephen Walker, who's brand new. But yep. Rossi's definitely well-connected.
Yes.
I liked it. It was, like, a really... We didn't get them all together, really, in a scene, other than maybe, like, at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But they all had their moments.
They were all able to contribute, but it was definitely Rossi's episode, huh?
Yeah. It was all Rossi.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because love Joe Mantegna. Yeah.
Yeah. No, great. I think it really highlighted him and showed his strengths well. It brought vulnerability, like I said, to the character, so you get to see the softer side of the toughness in this episode, which mm-hmm. I thought was cool. It's strangely, like, I had the feeling like I had seen it before, and maybe I had caught the original 101 or something before, but the whole thing where he was cooking just looked so familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, this is where, you know, I really see his strength in this episode. I liked it. I liked the revelations that were made about his character.
Yeah. You can definitely see how Rossi deals with each case, because we've seen JJ, like, go home and she brings it back. You know, she brings that baggage back with her. But you see how Rossi deals with each case, which is a different way we really haven't seen Rossi.
And it's got to be
it's
challenging.
A whole different side.
It's got to be challenging to take on that kind of... to live in that space. We see that at the end, and I'm sure you're going to get to that with the young agent.
Oh, yeah, Agent Clark.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I know, like, I had a friend that used to go overseas, and she would fight for women's rights and women's abuse cases. And she said eventually it just got to be so much that she couldn't have that be part of her life anymore, because it becomes mm-hmm. all-consuming. And you'd think if you're hunting down these cases and going after these people, that is, especially when a serial killer like this, it's prolific. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to take it on. How do you deal with that? So I'm going to get to see that there's many different ways of doing that. You know, mm-hmm. Emotionally, I think not just the psychology of working out what happened, but also how do you emotionally dance with the beast?
Yeah,
you find that balance.
Yeah.
You know, the work life, and you can't bring that home. It was like that I completely understand.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised, though, from that agent, him being one of the few agents in that room that was actually answering everything and was, like, the most engaged in all the questions and in the conversation. And then he was the one that ended up leaving the program. Did you see that coming?
Kind of.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's one of those things where... the people who are best suited for a job may choose not to want it, and he was naturally gifted, and because of that, he could think through the outcomes of how this might go down and weigh the pros and cons of his, you know, his life with his fiance and the things he wanted for his family versus his passion for the job. And for some people, those don't equal out, and he chose to say goodbye to the job. And I think that that's really commendable that you can know that about yourself. Mm-hmm. Because if he had decided to go down the road and become an agent and do that, he would have been distracted in both aspects of his life because he couldn't fully commit to either one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, but I appreciated it when it did happen. You know, mm-hmm. it was like, all right. And, you know, I appreciated Rossi's response where he's, you know, he's kind of like, well, sorry that I'm losing one of my best candidates here, but he got it. You know, you can't put a square peg in a round hole, and it's, yeah.
And I agree. It's like, just because you're really good at something, you're naturally gifted at it, doesn't mean that you should do it, because that doesn't mean you'll be happy doing it.
Yeah.
Just because you're good at it.
Right.
You shouldn't have to do it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it because I think that brings the humanity within the characters, too, because it is a tough job. And they said really at the beginning, like, this is a difficult position, and it, not everyone can do it. And you just have to, at the end of the day, remember what they all go through all these cases. But overall, I really enjoyed this episode. The quotes at the beginning. What madness is it to be expecting evil before it comes? That's from Lucius Aeneas.
That's a great quote, actually. Seneca. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and that was also, you know, the whole taunting of Yeats, knowing that there's evil before you knew it came. And then the quote at the end, which I liked that interaction. It wasn't a voiceover. It was actually, the life of the dead is placed in the memory of the living.
I love that quote.
Life of the dead is placed in the memory of the living, yeah.
By Marcus Tullius Cicero. But that also, you know, really resonates with Rossi's line, or Rossi's storyline, that Tommy Yates will live through him.
Yeah, hopefully not too much.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I chose to focus on the positive and all the victims he recovered and the families he brought closure to.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His job had a purpose.
It definitely did. All right. Anything else about this episode?
It was good. I'm glad we're back.
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
It was good. Yeah. It was a very solid episode.
Next week's look good as well. It looks good as well.
Mm-hmm. So, real quickly, my segment, Profile.
Do that one more time. Do that one more time.
Profile. too fun. That's a whole different show.
Yes, it is. I chose different notes.
Too fun facts about this episode. Riggio, or Riggio, is inspired by a family name of the writer Virgil Williams.
Riggio? Who was Riggio?
Riggio.
What was that?
They mentioned Riggio.
Did they?
Riggio's?
Yeah, Riggio.
The Italian restaurant. That
yeah, Riggio.
Oh, the Italian restaurant comes from Virgil. Okay.
The meatball sub. Riggio's was inspired by a family name. And Damon Gupton, who plays Stephen Walker, he earned his Bachelor of Music degree in trombone and music education.
Nice.
And there was that whole reference with him.
Oh, he says, I play the trombone. Yeah. So he really plays the trombone.
He really does.
So they each had to pick their own thing? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I wonder.
Just say what you would do.
If we'll see that.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
That'd be cool. And a little bit.
Yeah, we'll have an episode where he plays the trombone with the perp. With the ensemble. Okay, anyway.
I can't really imagine that happening.
No.
All right.
But real quick news and gossip. Real quick. So, I mean, we just got a new profiler, Stephen Walker, but we're getting another profiler.
What?
Really? Yeah, we're getting another one. Harold Perrineau, a frequent TV actor best known for his work on Lost, has joined the cast of Criminal Minds in a major recurring role. Quote unquote.
Interesting.
He will play Calvin Shaw, a former FBI agent who was imprisoned for killing one of his informants. So we're getting another FBI agent.
Who's
I'm not sure if he's in profiler.
Killing
actually.
His informant. Wow.
But yeah. We're getting another FBI agent.
Now, was he
agent.
Deep undercover in prison or?
We don't know.
Yes.
But we're going to find another agent amongst our mist.
There you go.
Do you think that's too many agents now? There's a lot. Because I noticed watching this episode, we had everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't really have Reed. Where the heck was Reed in this episode?
He went to be with his mom.
Yes, I know.
Oh, yeah, he was gone.
He does that.
No, that's true. But like, but if you think about it, like, the more people that bring
they just
in...
Get their, yeah, it's just like they have like, their walk-ons.
They have to, they have to distribute the lines, and like, some people get less lines. This was all Rossi. Like, we hardly saw JJ in this episode other than her, like, two lines.
JJ and Lewis were just in that one scene together.
They were, like, mere thoughts in this episode. So, like, my problem is, like, I love...
The characters?
I love all the characters. I want to see them more. But the more people we have, that means, like, you have to distribute the lines out.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting.
We get less amount of times with all
What's
of
the
them.
Point?
You said he was an agent that was in prison because he killed an informant.
A former FBI agent who was in prison for killing one of his informants.
He's a character that got close with Peter Lewis on the inside. Mm. And they're utilizing the fact that he used to be an agent and working with him to crack something. That's what I'm going to go with.
That's a good, so... Yeah.
Don't do crack. Crack is bad.
Crack is very bad. So does that take us to predictions then?
It might be a segue.
Very good segue.
Thank you.
Oh, we actually have predictions today.
We do.
Okay.
I think we can.
Yeah.
So they got another unsub from, you know, well, like another serial killer from the breakout, but there's still a few out there.
There's still two and Lewis.
Yeah. They were all serial killers that broke out.
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Because they were in the ward that all the serial killers were in. But yeah, we still have a few more. So yeah, we definitely see the storyline being drawn out this whole season. But I was like, I liked your thought.
Yeah. Like, I don't think they would add another agent to the team in any capacity that we would expect normally. But someone who used to work for the FBI that murdered someone and had to go to prison, like, they might utilize that individual in a unique way.
You know, it's interesting in real life, when they have prison breakouts, don't they seem to catch the people pretty quickly? I don't hear the story. Well, maybe it's just because you hear the stories when they catch them.
Well, that episode, they were all literally being shot.
Well, so this guy got caught pretty quickly. This guy got caught pretty quickly. I'm just saying, like, they seem to be on it when they
went. He walked literally right up to the agent, be like, here I am.
Take me.
Yeah, so like, this is my location.
But it seems like, so you think that this season they might drag out the serial killer's experiences as they chase them, kind of as a season arc?
Yeah,
I think so. I think that they're going to catch the other two and it's going to end with Peter Lewis, because Peter Lewis was the mastermind before of this entire prison breakout. I think they're going to use that new character in that way, maybe. And I think that we're going to see more one-off episodes, but episodes that focus on characters. Like, there has to be one about Reed coming up. In fact, I think they tweeted out, like, a picture of an episode titled Spencer that I'm really terrified to watch when that comes out.
Yeah. An episode that Kirsten Vegas helped write.
Yep, which means it's going to break my heart.
It's going to be heartbreaking.
Erica, I'm Kirsten.
Shoot. You're right. I definitely think Scratch will get caught at the end, if not the finale of this season. And we saw the quick preview for next episode. It's all girls.
All girls, yeah.
Teenage girls or women or young adults.
And by the way, that's not why I said it would look good.
No, which is actually a very rare thing.
Yeah, you don't see that on
it. It's rare to see female serial killers, so.
Or that's unsubs.
Yeah, unsubs. Yeah. I mean, we've had some female serial killers on this show, but never in a pack.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that. Yep. But in the meantime, where can everyone keep following you?
Follow me at, unless you're a serial killer, follow me at Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me on Twitter at @Michelle_Cullen.
You can follow me on Twitter at @SerafiniTV. You can follow all of us here on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms at @AfterBuzzTV. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing, keep talking to us, and we will talk to you. Yay, we're back.
Yay.
Yes, and we will see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.